an acquaintance came over that he brought in a pint of mango ice cream, and he brought along with him a job application. Okay. He saw the sign at the window, hiring. So he asked for application and handed it to me. He said, hey, there's this place. And by that time, I was probably 2 weeks into San Francisco.
That was Marlon Payumo, store manager at Mitchell's Ice Cream. I'm Jeff, and this is Storied San Francisco, a podcast all about the artists, activists, and small businesses that make this city so special. I remember the first time I encountered Mitchell's. It was probably 2007 or 8, and I had just had dinner at nearby Front Porch on 29th Street. I was walking back to a friend's house when I noticed a long line in front of a shop at 29th and San Jose. I asked what that was all about, and my friend admonished me for not knowing. That, they told me, was Mitchell's Ice Cream, and you'd better get you some. In this episode, we'll hear from Marlon, as well as co-owners Brian and Linda Mitchell. First up, here's Linda.
Our father, Larry Mitchell, and his brother Jack, who was 10 years older than him, started the business in 1953. And the reason they started the business was this building in 1948 was going to be torn down because the city was widening San Jose Avenue. So they
in
wanted
40,
the
I'm thinking
buildings.
Car culture, yeah. Highway culture, yeah.
Right, so they wanted the buildings that were kind of blocking them from making the street wider out of the way. So our family fought that, and the city, I'm assuming it was at our family's expense, but they decided to turn the building.
Okay.
So they picked it up and turned it. So our address used to be on 29th Street.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And now it's on San Jose Avenue.
Wow.
Which is kind of a funny thing, because when we were researching for insurance purposes at City Hall, the records on 688, 692 San Jose Avenue were kind of sparse. And all of a sudden it dawned on me that the address would have been different.
Right.
So that sure enough, there was another file on, I think it's 110 29th Street.
Okay.
Which pieced the whole thing together.
Yeah.
So, and that's how we ended up with a parking lot.
Is it the same building then?
Same building.
But that's where it used to be is now the parking lot.
Yes.
They literally picked it up. I've heard of them doing this with old Victorians in other parts of the city.
They move them to other streets. And
That's such a fascinating, crazy thing. But so that happened here.
Yeah. So what happened was the gentleman who had, where our store is now, who was running a business there, he had a liquor store. And so he had to move when they were going to turn the building.
Okay.
So it sat there empty for a couple of years. This was after the war, of course, so I guess it just sat here empty. And that's when our father and his brother Jack started thinking about opening a business.
So it wasn't ice cream right away. They just wanted to do
Was it? They had to decide what they wanted to do, and they decided to open an ice cream store.
Do you know where that came from in either of their background, or is it just...
A couple of things. Our grandparents had a little dairy up on Upper Noe and 29th Street up there.
Okay.
You know, those hills just had little family farms at the time. So that was part of it. They did have a family history of dairy.
Fresh ingredients.
Yeah. And then Garrett's Ice Cream was over on Ocean Avenue.
Okay.
Only old-timers remember Garrett's
days.
But it was a very, very popular, very successful ice cream store.
Okay.
So kind of a combination of those two things, I think, made them decide to open an ice cream store.
It was kind of in the family and then a major inspiration.
Dairy, but not ice cream making.
Not ice cream,
so they really didn't know what they were doing.
Right.
But in those days, people were able to help and with new businesses. So they contacted, was it Foremost Dairy? And a salesman came out, and he spent several days teaching them how to make ice cream. Now, that would never happen today.
Right.
You know, but they learned from him. He gave them a few recipes to get started. The store was built out by our father and our uncle and another uncle and our grandfather and probably a few friends thrown in along the way. But they built it all out, designed it and everything, and opened up on June 6th, 1953.
Wow. So refrigeration and all that must have already been available. Or was it ice box?
No, well, they technology. No, they had freezers.
Okay.
But they didn't have here mm-hmm. in our shop. Mm-hmm. They only had like little reach-in freezers. Mm-hmm. So it was very small to start with. And mm-hmm. then in 1956, they had our main freezer built, which is when you go into the store, there's a big bump out on the right-hand side, and that's our main freezer.
Okay.
And that's what we are tearing apart this week rebuilding.
Right, okay.
So it's been there since 1956.
So
the first 3 years, they just worked out a little tiny reach-in freezers.
Got it. And were they making the ice cream in this building as well?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We've always made it in the same little teeny tiny room, which you'll see at some point.
Oh, for sure. I'd love to see that. Get some pictures.
Yeah, the room is smaller than this, right, Marlon?
Just right above.
You'll see.
Yeah.
It's tiny.
And you'll be amazed.
And my listeners will be amazed.
That we can crank out that much.
Everybody's like, no, this can't be the only place you make ice cream. How do you sell it everywhere?
Right.
But we do. The guys work really hard.
We're very efficient.
Okay. So they opened it, was it 53?
53.
And then we don't have to be very specific about if you don't want to date yourself, but like, when did you guys, when did your dad start having kids?
I was born, well, my sister was already born.
Okay.
So she's 2 years older than me. So
older for both of you.
Yes.
She's the oldest. Okay.
Yes. So I actually turned 70 next month. So
congratulations.
Obviously I am
She doesn't look it, does she?
No, you look great. It's all the ice cream.
Yeah. Right, all that cream.
Yeah.
Good genes.
So, right. I was born the year after the store opened.
Okay.
And I was born 8 years after we opened. 1961.
Oh, you're the baby.
Yes.
He's the baby.
I'm also the baby, so yes. I really...
Yeah.
Not to the ice cream shop.
So we have both been eating Mitchell's ice cream since before we were born.
Amazing. Let's hear your story, sir.
I came in this country in 1987.
Okay.
I first landed in Guam. As soon as I got my green card, by chance, I went along with my grandpa, and I heard they're coming over to San Francisco.
Oh.
I didn't know exactly what San Francisco is all about.
Right.
Yeah, no idea. So I tagged along with them, one-way ticket, because, you know, that's all I could afford at the time. So 88, by chance, I landed a job here at Mitchell's. 1988.
Okay. And when how old were you?
I was 19 years
19.
Old. 19 when I started.
Okay.
Now I can proudly say I'm 57. No shame about it.
Not at
I'm
all.
56. Yeah,
no. I'm also 56, looking very good.
57 actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 1988 when Brian interviewed me and hired me.
Yeah.
And
how did that happen? Like, did you find them?
No, actually, it's by chance. An acquaintance came over that he brought in a pint of mango ice cream, and he brought along with him a job application.
Okay.
He saw the sign at the window hiring.
Yeah.
So he asked for application and handed it to me. He said, hey, there's this place. And by that time I was probably 2 weeks into San Francisco.
Oh my God.
2 weeks, maybe less than 2 weeks. And I'm looking for a job right away.
Yeah.
I was looking for one. And sure enough, I filled it in and I turned it out. I was late, as a matter of fact. And I'm glad that Brian gave me another chance. I don't know if you remember that. I was late.
No.
Yeah, so you gave me another shot and he hired me. That was 1988, September, if I'm not mistaken, June 1988.
I have so many thoughts right now. Like, the shop was only 30 years old. You were not even 20 years old, and you'd been here, you said, 2 weeks?
Yes.
Ish, something like that?
Yes,
like you
maybe less.
Didn't know the city at
all? No, not at all.
Right?
No. All I can think of, my grandpa kept telling me, is Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
I don't know what Silicon Valley is, but it sounds very interesting to me. So I said, okay. And that's all he told me, Silicon Valley. And I didn't know anything about San Francisco.
Yeah.
No idea.
Did you already live in the city or?
No. No, I was still fresh in the city. I live by the Excelsior District.
Okay.
Living with my aunt.
Yeah.
That I just found out that they live here.
Yeah.
So I stayed with them 2 weeks, and then I got this job.
Amazing.
By chance.
And what fate. You might not have known it then, but like here you are. All these years later, you're still here. That's great.
You know what? I'm just thankful to have a job.
Yeah.
I was so happy. You know, back home, once you have a job, you'll keep that forever. Mm-hmm. Just because you're lucky to have a job. Mm-hmm. There's no option. There's no other choice there to find another one.
Yeah.
And I work and got paid, and not knowing what to expect, they're busy.
Yeah.
When I got here, they're super busy. Mitchell's super busy.
So the lines have always been a thing.
Oh, yes. It was way worse before. Because we had no competition anywhere around us.
Right. For ice cream and for lines.
There was more competition.
Oh, there was.
When in the 70s?
Yeah, into the 80s, into too. The 80s. There was yogurt was a big craze.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Frozen yogurt in the 80s, huge. And we got a machine, and we had a couple of flavors, but it never sold well.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of new, like now, artisanal shops then. There was Uncle Gaylord's, a bunch of other companies that opened multiple branches. Mm-hmm. And then there was Mitchell's, of course, and Bud's. On the corner on Castro.
Oh, okay.
And ironically, it's a submarine sandwich shop that sells Mitchell's ice cream. But back in the day, in the 80s, Bud's was it besides us.
Right.
And that was a tiny shop. It is a tiny shop.
Right.
Yeah. But we had competition. Then frozen yogurt was huge in the 80s. So, you know, we're still here, so.
I didn't start working here until 1991, so by the time I started here, all that was gone. Mm. And there was really...
It was a fad.
Especially in the Mission, we were it.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, we would get unbelievable crowds.
Yeah.
Crazy crowds.
Yeah, and then it was before we really had our ice cream half gallons out in the stores as well.
Right.
We were in Asian stores, but not the Molly's, Stone's, Drager's. So, you know, people will buy our product at a Molly's in Burlingame, not come into the city.
Right.
Or if they're in the Sunset, they'll go to a store out there that carries it.
Right.
So it's changed, but we're still selling our product.
Yeah. So 91 is when when did you join? You were already here to interview Marlon.
Yes.
So you started before that. I joined here
in late 1979. I graduated high school, and then I went to Santa Clara University, and I worked on the weekends. And in the summer, you know, full time.
Yeah.
And then I got a business degree in management. Graduated, then I came to work here right after that in the summer of 83.
And did y'all's sister also work here, or were you kind of the first?
No, actually, our sister Teresa worked here during college in the early 70s.
Oh, okay.
And my uncle said she was the hardest worker of all the boys.
Oh, wow.
She was the hardest worker.
She hated working here.
And I believe it, because she's a very hard worker, very conscientious.
Yeah, she is. She's very conscientious.
So I could see her spinning circles around these guys.
Yeah.
And they were probably very happy she did.
Oh, so yeah.
We don't have to do anything.
You were here to see that yogurt phase that you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Fad.
Yeah, we got a machine, and we didn't have room for two or three machines because it was that popular. So we had the one that we stuck where it used to be a closet, and we put a yogurt machine in there. And we never really sold a lot.
While still making what at the time was like your ice cream.
Oh, absolutely.
Arsenal.
Yeah, this was a supplement. What was the craze at the time.
Right.
Yeah, we had to.
Yeah.
People were asking.
Right. It's just smart business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Linda, when you came on, what were you doing here when you started?
Well, our Aunt Alice had worked here for at least 40 years, right?
She was our bookkeeper.
Yeah. Okay.
And she did customer service early years.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I basically came in to help Brian. I'd been in banking for 12 years.
Oh wow.
So it was a big change for me.
Yeah.
And a big decision. because I was living in Florida at the time.
Oh, okay.
And so I was kind of training to take over her job.
Got it.
So she did all the, like Brian said, the bookkeeping and everything.
Yeah.
So at that time, everything was manual. There was nothing was computerized or anything. So, so it was kind of a nice projects along the way to get everything computerized, get software, accounting software, and start making signs on the computer and everything else. It just kind of a whole new world for me.
Yeah. Did you like it right away? Did it take some getting used to?
It took some getting used to. I was really hesitant to come work here because in college I taught tennis most of the time in college. Oh. But then when I got into graduate school, I thought, I better get some business experience. So I went to work at a 7-Eleven.
In Florida or?
In Texas, actually. And, I finished school in Texas. I went to first 2 years at San Francisco State. It's in West Texas, yeah. Odessa. It was a branch of the University of Texas.
I'm from Fort Worth, so I'm familiar with all the smaller. That's a big football town, too. Huge football town.
Very.
She got a tennis scholarship at the University
of Texas.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So.
So you worked at 7-Eleven in Texas.
Yes. So I worked at 7-Eleven. Nightmare job.
Like in the store.
In the store. I was a store manager.
Okay.
There were three of us. The store was open 24 hours.
Yes.
So there were times that I had to work 24 hours if I had both employees out.
Wow.
It was just a nightmare. So that was my experience with retail.
Okay.
So it took a little convincing by Brian to get me to come out here.
Was coming back to your hometown part of the, like...
Yeah, I definitely had strong thoughts of moving back to California because I lived in Texas and Florida, both very conservative states.
Yeah.
So I that was part of the decision-making process.
And then, Brian, did you ever leave?
No. No. Burlingame.
Well, we won't hold that against you. But it was never a question of leaving the Bay Area, though.
No, no. I had my sights on working here. Work for myself.
Yeah.
It was successful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could work for my dad.
Right.
You know? Yeah, it was good.
Okay. So, I'm building a chronology of your lives, but also of the business, and those I think we've got to the point where those have all intersected. And early 90s is when you came in.
Yeah, and I don't think I answered your question whether I liked it when I started.
Oh, whether you liked the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I did. I'm trying to remember. It's been, a long time. I think I did, and I really liked all the employees, and I loved working with Brian and my dad, so... Yeah, I think from the start, I thought it was a good move.
How many employees around that time, or like around the time that Marlon, that you were hired, how many?
Oh, I would say...
30s?
I would say 30.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, high 20s.
And 30. What is it today?
Not much more, 35, 36?
We're at almost 40 now.
Oh, we're 30, at 40,
39
okay.
39 or so.
Okay, it's gone up.
And does that kind of include the store and then the business part of it, or...
Well, it's all just right there.
Everything's just right there.
Yeah.
It's all there is.
We do delivery, so we have a manufacturing team of how many men? Nine.
Yeah.
And then we have all the part timers.
Delivery guys.
Because you're open 7 days a week, 12 hours a day.
Right.
So
a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, and then these days, the younger generation, they don't want to work as much, so we have to have more staffing.
More of them.
Before they would work 3 days a week, four, now it's like 1 to 2, maybe.
Right.
It's challenging.
Yeah, it's a different work culture.
Very different.
Now.
Very different.
Can we go back to the 90s, though? Like, I want to hear... So the yogurt craze is over. What is it? You're just cranking out the ice cream? Like, when did all the fun flavors
come? Next was coffee.
Okay.
Espresso.
Okay.
We got an espresso machine.
Let's hear about that. Yeah. So this would be like... outside of the store and what's happening in society is the Starbucksification of the United States.
Mid to late 90s, perhaps.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble and Starbucks and all that.
Yeah, coffee craze. And so we got a little espresso machine, and we would do our espressos and cappuccinos and do them over ice cream, vanilla.
Like an affogato.
We thought of doing it because wintertime is slower, mm-hmm. and we thought it would be a good addition
and
to
what
we
sold. And it was so popular.
Yeah.
So popular.
But we discovered that people who come into ice cream stores only want ice cream.
Yeah.
Typically.
So eventually that cappuccino machine disappeared.
Okay.
Yeah. We got like over it and, you know, sales were not rising. So
yeah,
it's not worth the trouble and the limited space we have.
Right.
So we got a second cash register instead, which was much more efficient and helpful.
Yes. And that would help the lines. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That was Linda Mitchell, Brian Mitchell, and Marlon Payumo from Mitchell's Ice Cream. Check back next week to learn how Mitchell's came to carry and be known for its less traditional ice cream flavors. Part 2 drops next Tuesday, wherever you get podcasts. Music for Storied San Francisco was produced, performed, and curated by Otis McDonald. Aaron Lim of Bitch Talk Podcast is our contributing producer. And the show is produced and hosted by me, Jeff Hunt. Now in our sixth season, we have more than 200 episodes available on our website, storiedsf.com, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're able to, please rate and review the show, and drop us a line at storiedsf@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Keep rejecting those silly doom loop narratives about our city. Stay wacky, weird, healthy, and creative. And we'll see you next time on Storied San Francisco. We acknowledge and respect the first humans of the unceded land we call San Francisco, the Ramaytush Ohlone. We condemn the genocide of these and other tribes across the Western Hemisphere. We honor their legacy and history, and we support rematriation and sovereignty efforts.
This podcast is a proud member of the BFF.fm podcast network. Learn more at podcasts.bff.fm.
BFF.fm, best frequencies forever.